You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And today we have a surprise for you. A player that, from what I've researched, has fought and clawed his way to where he is today. A guy that can score with the best of them, worked his way from a small community college in the States all the way to the EuroLeague. But right now, he finds himself playing in Belgrade for one of the classics, Partizan. Welcome, my first Euro Cup guest ever on the Crossover with Joe R. Lucas, Kevin Bunter.
How you doing, man? Man, appreciate you, man. Glad to be here. Excited. Feeling good, though. Can't complain. Feeling real good.
Man, when they called me up, they're like, hey, we're going to do Kevin Punter. I started looking around for you in the EuroLeague. I said, who? I can't find his name up in the EuroLeague. No, he's in the Euro Cup now. He's in the EuroLeague. I'm like, I know he was in the EuroLeague last year. I did his game.
Yeah, I'm playing Euro Cup this year, man. You know, playing Euro Cup this year, switch it up a little bit.
There's so much that I want to know. Like, believe it or not, even though, I'm twice your age, you're 28, I'm 56. I said, we have a couple things in common that you're going to figure out.
100%. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, as we go, you'll see. There's a couple things in common. Number one, I'm from New York.
Really?
Yeah, I'm from Rochester. I'm from upstate New York.
Upstate, okay. Got you.
I know that doesn't count.
I give you the benefit of the doubt. You ain't from the city, but it's all right. Whatever, it's all good.
You gave me that look that everybody gives me when I say I'm from New York. Out here in Europe, if I say, they say, where you from? I'm like New York, man. If I say Rochester,
Yeah, they gonna be lost.
Man. But you grew up in the Bronx. What is that like? Yeah. You went to high school in Raleigh, right?
So I went to high school in Westchester. I went to prep school in Raleigh, North Carolina. So, I mean, I grew up in the Bronx from the time I was born up until I went to prep school. Once I went to prep school, that's kind of like when my life started to be away from home and everything like that. So, but other than that, before that part, it was all Bronx, New York.
Tell some of the people that have no idea what it's like to grow up in the Bronx, man, what it was like.
Just real, real gritty. To be honest with you, not to sugarcoat anything, just real, you get caught up in the wrong stuff early. If you're not focused, I just thank God I was able to. I was blessed to have both my parents just play basketball. You know, I lived in a community where, playing basketball just kept me out of trouble. Playing basketball just had other people look at me and understand that I wasn't trying to be in the street. You know what I'm saying? So I grew up in all of that stuff. So, like I said, I just thank God I was just able to hoop, play basketball, and just kind of stay out of trouble.
Like I said, we're going to laugh about it probably a couple of times, but I was in Rochester. But still, I grew up in the inner city in Rochester, you know? And, the best ball I played and where I learned how to be a man and play basketball was in the playground.
For sure, 100%.
But there was so many outside influences, man, between drugs and alcohol and everything else. In my city, which was a small city in the Bronx, I can't even imagine. To me, I always say it was my parents, man, because I never wanted to disappoint my parents. And that's why I never got in. Like, all my boys were into drugs. They were into whatever. Yeah. But I was just kind of like, I was all about sports.
Nah, I was kind of the same way. I could really agree with that. Like I said, I had both my parents, and I ain't never wanted to disappoint my parents. And they always kind of kept me and my brother kind of on the fine line straight. But I say it all the time. It's like, when you go to school, I could tell you numerous things I didn't see, I didn't been through. That my parents don't even know, because if they would know, they would lose their mind. You know what I'm saying? Just being 100% honest with you. So I just thank my mom and my dad kind of just for keeping me and my brother, keeping our head right, and us just being smart too, because it's easy to get lost. Where we was from, it's easy to get lost. Easy. So I just thank them.
How many people can you just think of, like, quickly that you play ball with or you were boys with that got lost along the way?
A ton. Even sometimes when I go back home, it's dudes I went to third grade with. I see that just like on the block, doing what they do on the block. And, we ain't even got to speak on that, but just doing what they do, kind of handling their business. Like, even when I come home, after the season, when I go back home, it'll be the same thing. I'll go right to my neighborhood. And there's dudes that's been there since I was in 7th, 8th grade, high school. So, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. Obviously Bobby Dixon. Ali Muhammad, we call him now, I guess.
Yep.
Man, when I did the interview with him, man, it was just like, he ended up in jail selling drugs and doing, and now he's here. So I just love those stories because it is one in many that actually make it. But you went from there, which really makes me laugh after talking to you now. And I don't mean to laugh at you, but the prep school is called Body of Christ, Body of Christ Christian Academy in Raleigh, North Carolina. How you get from the Bronx to the Body of Christ Christian Academy?
It has nothing to do with that, to be honest with you. My grades was real messed up in high school. All I cared about was hoops. I didn't really take school serious.
Hey, join the group, man. I was the same way.
I had like a 2-3 GPA in high school, like a 2-2-2-3. Like, it was a complete failure. Like, I still managed to make it through, graduated, and I didn't have my SAT score. So that was the whole big thing. So I was trying to go to prep school to get the SAT scores, and now I'm like, what do I go for, fifth year, this and that? And my dad ended up running into like a prep school coach. I was starting up a new prep school.
No way.
Took a chance. We took a chance to say, you know what? It sounds about right. X, Y, Z. Took a chance. Ended up going. Ended up working out. Still did not get my SAT score. Ended up going to junior college. But then the next year, the school closed down because they wasn't NCAA qualified. Sanctioned. So it ended up shutting down. And that was a whole big situation. So I just ended up going to JUCO, not knowing nothing about JUCO.
JUCO is State Fair, the State Fair Community College?
State Fair Community College in Missouri, yep.
Oh, damn, it was in Missouri, too. I forgot about that.
And just being in Raleigh, that was my first time away from home. First ever time away from, like, the Bronx, New York for that amount of time, you know? So I was homesick, just culture shock, people's country. Like, just dealing with that side of things, I'm just like, I'm struggling to get my SAT score. So it was just, that was just another phase of my life I was kind of was, you know, was going through. That was pretty tough.
People out here in Europe, sometimes they don't understand that when you say culture shock, they don't understand. They're like, man, you're in the same country. There ain't no culture shock, but going from the Bronx to Raleigh, North Carolina to Missouri, it's culture shock.
Yeah, it was 100% culture shock. Like people just the way of living was different than what I was used to, you know? So that was, and I was 18 years old. You know what I'm saying? I was young, away from my people for that long. It was like, man, it's tough.
I read at one point during that time, you wanted to give up the game. You were just done with it.
Yeah, I was done.
Was it the mental part? Was it the physical part? You'd rather be like out on the streets and doing whatever? Did you have other goals that you wanted to give up basketball for?
Nah, I didn't have no other goals. Basketball was all I knew. It was my SAT score, which is why I wanted to stop. I took it 7 times. That's a lot of people don't know. I took that. Took the SAT test 7 times, couldn't get my exact number I needed to qualify. And I called my mother, just like, I quit. Like, I don't want to, I called her crying. I was like 18, called her crying. Like, I quit. I don't want to play no more. I might just come home. Come home and do what?
This is in Missouri.
Nah, this is when I was in prep school. This is before I got to junior college. I didn't know nothing about junior college. So I'm like, man, I'm going home. What am I going to do? I don't know, but that part of my life, I don't even want to know because I don't even want to know what I would have did because who knows? Because I sure don't. So my mom said, call me back. And then if you still want to be done with basketball, I'll come pick you up. I'll bring you home. I said, cool. Called her back about 30 minutes later after I got all my emotions and everything out. Didn't want to make an emotional decision. It was like, you know, I still want to play. Like, I love basketball. Endured it, and we kind of just went to see what was the next step in trying to move forward. And that's when the whole junior college thing came up.
After that, the crazy thing is I see, you have to understand when I'm researching these things, man, like so many things pop up that alarms for Body of Christ Christian Academy, State Fair Community. To me, State Fair Community College is like something, you know, like you hear State Fair, you think about a state fair.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden I look, I'm like, Tennessee? SEC, and averaging 22 points a game, dude. How does that happen? And that's the reason why when I introduced you, and I introduced you not knowing exactly what the deal was, but it just feels like you fought and clawed your way, like I said, to get to where you are, because not too many people make it from these names of schools.
100%. I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you.
And then you show up in the SEC in Tennessee, all-league second team, 22 a game. How? Tell me how.
Just resilience, to be honest with you, just never giving up. My work ethic. I feel like I get my work ethic from my parents and just wanting more out of life, to be honest with you. Like, it's no real big story to it. It's just wanting more out of life. I always had a dream of playing at a high level in terms of Division I basketball, always dreamed of playing in the NBA. So just having that desire at a young age and just working and working and working and just being the dog, that kind of what got me to that point, and just praying every day, to be honest with you. Like, a lot of prayer in that time. People won't really tell you that part, but, man, it was a lot of nights where I pray every night and just hoping and wishing for these things. And obviously just doing my part, but a lot of prayer during these times. That's when I first started praying in my life, when I got to prep school, when I was away from home. That's when I first ever started to understand and try to get closer. You know what I'm saying? So that part of it is kind of like where it took off. And just, you know, I got the JUCO and didn't know nothing about it. Homesick still, and then kind of just educating myself on just what JUCO is and how you get better from it, and understand that you can still get to where you're trying to get to from these places, and just building and going from there.
Did you have any other offers from colleges other than Tennessee?
Yeah. Before Tennessee, I committed to Mizzou. I was going to Mizzou. I committed with Frank Hafe. He ended up leaving. I decommitted, and then I had almost every school in the country. I had A&M, Marquette, Gonzaga, Tennessee, SMU. I had almost everyone in the country. I was All-American. I was first-team All-American junior college, so I had pretty much had every school that I ever dreamed about. And then that's why I kind of decided to go to Tennessee, because the coach at Tennessee was recruiting me in prep school, and he was at Morehead State, named Donnie Tindall. He ended up getting a job at Tennessee, and so it was easy for me to kind of go there because I was already familiar with him. I was been talking to him maybe 3 years ago. So when he got the job, it was like, wow, I'm definitely going there. I took my visit, and then the rest was history. And then for me, I kind of was like, I got to work my way up.
I'm American. I was brought up in the States. We played basketball. I played baseball. I played every sport I could, you know, but it was always a dream to either be in the major leagues or the NBA or whatever. And you didn't get drafted in the 2016 draft. You went undrafted. Was that something that was really important to you? Was it something you didn't really expect? You didn't care? Did it ever come into your mind like, man, I might get drafted here? And then all of a sudden you don't?
100%. My junior year, I played with Josh Richardson. He's with Boston now. So going into my senior year, Rick Barnes comes.
That's my boy, man. Rick and I go way
really?
Back.
Really?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know, but my junior year, I played for Donnie. Senior year, Rick Barnes comes. He tells me if I want to be a pro, I have to change my shot. How I shoot now, I didn't shoot like that my junior year at college. So he transforms my entire shot. My senior year, I go to my senior year, shoot completely different, have one of the best seasons ever. Last 8 games of my season, I break my foot. At this point in time, I'm averaging 22. I got cheated out of first team all SEC. And then at this point in time, it's rumors and it's I could possibly get drafted. You know, the scouts at practice. So I'm kind of like, okay, like let's really, really focus and lock in because I could really do something here. And then boom, I break my foot. Instantly, I knew right then and there my college career was over. And I was just kind of like, I may be done in terms of just getting drafted because we all know how that goes.
You couldn't go to any postseason tournaments either, right? The pre-NBA?
Nah, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't do anything. It was 8 games left, and I broke my foot. I fractured my navicular in my foot, and then it was career done. Like, college, it was done. I was, like, 60 points away from being a 1,000-point scorer in 2 years. They never had that in history. You know, so, like, it was some things that I wanted that I just couldn't. I couldn't get it. So that was that.
That's part of the game, though.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Then you went playing the summer league, right, with Minnesota or the Timberwolves?
Yeah, yeah. Reality check.
Yeah, right? That was good. I got to bring up the good and the bad. That's what this interview
100%.
Is all about.
100%. 100%. Reality check.
And the only thing I thought of when I read this about the summer league, you know, you only played 6 games, didn't play much more, whatever, and didn't get much of a chance. Is like, man, if you were thinking about quitting basketball back in the day, did those emotions and those feelings come back to you to be like, damn, this just isn't worth it?
Not really not being worth it, but it's like, what do I do now? I'm not playing with the T-Wolves. I kind of feel lost. I know nothing about Europe. Still don't know anything about Europe. I'm still thinking like, oh, I'm going to go to T-Wolves. Something's good is going to come out. You know, I'm just being like...
You're dreaming.
Exactly. Not knowing anything, to be honest with you. So... That situation doesn't pan out to anything. My agent comes with this deal on the table. I looked at the numbers and I said, no, because basketball players don't make this much. So that's not, I'm still in that kind of world, like, you know? So my agent's like, look, if you don't take this, then what you gonna be doing? Sitting home until, so I kind of had to think about it. And mind you, at this point, I've never been in Europe and I don't even have a passport. The team gave us 48 hours to sign the deal. I don't even have a passport. I can't even. This is like when in August, I think. I forgot when something he was. But at this point, I have to report in probably like 2.5 weeks. I don't have a passport. I'm telling my agent, like, I don't have a passport, so I can't go. So I don't know what to tell you. Like, trying to just find any way to kind of like, I don't even want to do it. But then we end up getting that passport expedited, signed the deal, and that started a whole nother chapter of my life.
That's like old school stuff for me. That's how it was for us when I was back in the States. You know, it's like, oh, listen, I went to Sacramento, made the team, got cut like in right at Christmas time, right before the guaranteed deadline. Uh-huh. And my agent called me and said, "You want to go to Europe?" I'm like, "Where's that?" You know, I knew Italy because my mom was Italian.
Okay.
Looked like a boot. That's all I knew. And I was like, "Man, us in the States, we're just kind of closed into this big country." Yeah.
It's like you know nothing else. You like you know nothing else. Like you hear about Europe, but you like it's a lack of knowledge there.
This is one of my favorite questions that I ask all the American guys is, what's it like, man, when you're on that plane and you're up over the sea, you're up over the ocean and you're jumping over that big puddle, you know, and you have no idea what's waiting for you on the other side.
When you're looking at the ocean, it's, what am I getting myself into? Like, that's the first initial, like, and I'll tell you right now, I got off that flight not knowing anything once again and not having peers older than me that kind of went through what I went through, not knowing anything. I check my phone don't work. I'm trying to figure out why my phone not working. Like not knowing, hey, you need Wi-Fi when you're out the country if you don't have the right plan. So there's little things like that. I get to the hotel, it smelled different. I'm just, the beds are small. I'm like, hold on, what is this like? I go to plug in my charger. I go to plug in, you know, charge your phone. The outlet is different. So I'm like, nobody was going to tell me the outlet was... It's just a whole bunch of, it was just.
And back in the day, they gave you that one little outlet that blew all your electronic stuff up.
Exactly. So now you got to have the right outlet to make sure, you know, it doesn't burn a hole in the wall. So it's like, yo, what, you know what I'm saying? What did I get myself into? I'm having a hard time adjusting to the time zone. Because I think Greece was maybe, I forgot how many hours, maybe 6 or 7 hours.
It's 7 hours from the East Coast, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I'm trying to adjust to that. Not sleeping right, not eating right, because the food's different. It was, and this is all before preseason. I didn't even get through preseason yet, you know? So that part was just like, man, what did I get myself into, man?
I jumped on my flight from New York to Rome. I got when Sacramento let me go, I waited around for a little bit, got a job in Italy. My agent called me up, was like, hey, you got this. You might as well just do it. So I flew out there. I was the same way. I was like, I didn't know where this was going. I got there, right? And they're like, you ain't 7 foot. I said, what? And they said, your agent told me you were 7 foot. We're looking for a big man. I'm like, no, I said, I ain't 7 foot. Dude, I was in the airport for 2 hours. They were calling everybody trying to put me back on the plane to go back to the States because they didn't want nothing to do with me. That was my first European experience. A lot of people don't appreciate what it takes. And even now you see the European players going over to NBA. They still have, I believe it's a little bit easier. But y'all got, man, you're 28, dude. Y'all got it easy. You got FaceTime. You got all the WhatsApp.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I agree with you. I definitely agree.
I called my mom for 5 minutes. It cost me like $200. I could never see my mom. I go 9 months without seeing my mom and my dad or my sisters because you can't. We didn't have all that back then, you know?
Yeah. Nah, that makes sense, though. I definitely agree with you for sure because I don't know what I'd do without FaceTime.
Now you went to Greece. Then you went to Belgium, mm-hmm. Poland. Dude, you've been – hold on. Let me go check my numbers here. I've done it so many times that I forgot it. Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 – 9 different places in 5 years.
Yeah.
What's your adaptation process like? I mean, are you adapted to Europe in general, or do you feel like everywhere you go, you need to readapt to another society?
Nah, not early on in my career, I did. Now, I don't. You could put me anywhere in Europe. I'm a adapt easily. 9 times out of 10, I've been there already. And I know the things that I need to make me feel at home when I'm not home. You know what I'm saying? So it makes it easier. At first, you know, you don't know that because you had never been out the country. You're trying to figure it out. So it was rough for me at first. But then, you know, I'm 28 now. I'm 6 years in. So now it's a walk in the park. But my first 2 years was kind of rough. Just trying to figure out myself more and figure out, you know, how to really make it through these long seasons. But once I mastered that and kind of figured out, okay, do this more, relax more here, do things like that, then it made it a lot easier. And I had really good teammates, to be honest with you. Once I got to Ike and it was a lot more Americans on my team, it made it easy. And I was in a better city. It made me feel better.
Plus, so, you got like six teams and half of it's all with Americans on them. So you just like.
Exactly. So it kind of was like, okay, he's doing it too. Then it can't be that bad. Like, we all doing the same thing. Like, we all here, believe it or not, obviously on different levels, but everyone's here. So it can't be that bad.
That's one more thing we have in common. That was my second to last team I played with was Ike. I was part of like what are they, like the redheaded stepchild to Panathinaikos, you know, like we had second choice on practice times, we had second choice on the locker room time
because they shared the gym. That was the worst.
But in Poland, I think Poland was when you like started to build a name for yourself out there, right?
Yeah, that's kind of like when it.
That's when you became a scorer, really, in the Champions League.
Yeah, exactly. That was my first time playing twice a week. I remember hitting my agent. I'm like, why would I go from Greece to Poland? And he's like, because you never play twice a week. So I'm just like, okay, makes sense. And then I knew right then and there, it's like, all right, once you play twice a week, playing European competition, more people in Europe is going to be exposed. So I'm like, that's my chance to really apply pressure and really just dominate dudes. And that's kind of like, just had that mentality up until this point right now.
Then you were close to going to Turkey. Like mid-season through Poland, I read, and then you ended up nothing ever happened, and that's how you got died.
Yeah.
Was it more comfortable for you because you were in Lavrio, your first? Was it more comfortable for you to be in Ike and Athens? I mean, because in all reality, Greek is more Americanized than anything else. Just about everybody speaks English.
Exactly.
You don't have to worry about that. All the movies were in English when I was there. It was like, man. I was like, what I do in Spain for 10 years, man? Why wasn't I over here?
Exactly.
And plus, like you said, you got all the other Americans around to make yourself
it was easy, man. I don't want to say it was easy like that because you're still away from home, but it made certain things easier to cope with, to deal with, you know? So Poland was, I played with Ryan Harrell, but he came kind of mid-season. But before he got there, it was literally just me. I was the only American. So like I did everything by myself, and I didn't do anything. I just went home and played 2K.
You left there mid-season, right?
I left there maybe first week of February.
Those fans are great. What was it like to win the Champions League with those guys, with those fans?
Man, amazing. And that was my first time really playing for like a real big club with like fan base that's real active. So that was, I walked into something special, to be honest with you. And I remember playing against them when I was a rookie at Lavrio. So I kind of already was familiar with Ike and things like that. So it was dope, though. It was dope. And I walked right into a Greek Cup because my second game was Olympiakos. And we beat them. I had 14 off the bench. That was my second game.
What did you think about that environment, man? Well, that's a game right there. I mean, Ike Olympiakos in the final of a Greek Cup is huge.
Yeah, I walked right in. I'm coming straight from Poland. That game right there was probably the highest level of basketball I've played up until that point. So, like, not expecting and not knowing what's about to happen, I'm just knowing, like, I'm about to get these buckets. That's all I know. I played for Sakatar. He kind of was like, listen, like, when you go in the game, just be you. We're going to run XYZ sets. We need, you know what I'm saying, just be who you are. And that was it. The rest is history.
And that was the first time you ever knew Spanoulis then, right?
No, I knew who he was when I was at Lavrio. So I kind of was already familiar with the whole Greek teams and things like that and the players. So, but to be honest with you, I didn't think he was that good. I did not think he was that good. And most Americans would tell you he's not good when they first come to Europe because a lack of knowledge, not knowing, not doing history, not really paying attention. But as I continue to play more, understand more, I'm like, nah, he's good. Are you crazy? Now, if anybody say he's not good, I'll argue with you all day long. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's Billy's my guy, man. That's my guy.
I always tell him, like, man, if you put on your jersey and your shorts, you don't look like a player.
Yeah, at all. I know.
In the States, you need to look like a player before you can become a player.
Exactly. Exactly. If your socks look too low or, you know, we'd be like, nah, he's not good.
My boy Billy was a little, he had that little chubby to him, you know, whatever. But he'll take ass in a hole and sit that step back three in a minute.
Yep, exactly. And he'll talk a little trash to you too, man. He's an ultimate killer, man. He's an ultimate killer. I tell you that. He's definitely an ultimate killer.
that's kind of, and I mean, I love EuroLeague basketball. I'm a EuroLeague ambassador. I do this podcast. I commented the games, and I love it. And I think it's a better product overall than the NBA to watch on a daily basis. But I miss killers, man. I miss somebody just coming out and dropping 35. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yep. And every game is important.
You drop like 10, 12, and you need to go take a rest for 5 minutes on the bench. I don't know how y'all do it. I'd be on the bench yelling at my coach, go, man, put me back in.
Yeah, you gotta adjust, man. That part of it too, you gotta adjust. I was used to playing 30-something minutes. I came to Europe, it's like 18. I'm like, hold on. What are we doing here?
Yeah, but dude, that prolongs your career, man. You make more money, more time.
That's true. Yeah, no, that's, you got to learn that as you go on. I started to learn that.
I stopped when I was 35. I just got operated on 4 months ago on my back. So, you know, it's like 21 years later. I still trying to keep in shape, got operated on. But, man, I could have played until I was 40 if I played like you guys play. What about Italy, man? That's another thing we had in common. Like, when I was playing for Real Madrid, I did sign with Bologna, but then I turned it down. That was a beautiful little town, isn't it?
Yeah, it was dope. It was dope. It's not too big, but it's not too small. It's like kind of perfect. It's kind of like perfect. It had really nice restaurants around, good vibe. So it was. I definitely enjoyed my time there. Definitely did. And that was my first. Yeah, it was my first time in Italy too. So I heard nothing but a lot of good things about the basketball. So I was excited that year to. To be in Italy.
MVP of the finals. Of course you're excited. MVP of the...
yep, got that.
Busted 27 in the final. He's stepping up, you know, in the big moments, big players in big moments. That's what they call it.
Yep, for sure, man. Definitely had to. I wasn't. I wanted that back-to-back so bad.
Who'd y'all beat in that championship?
Team from Spain, Tenerife.
Tenerife, okay.
Tenerife, yep. I think we beat Tyrese Rice when he was with, in Germany. Oh, I forgot the name.
Rossi.
Yep, Bamberg.
When Ty was there, Ty, my boy, he did. We did a podcast too. I love it, man.
He's cool. He's cool. That's when I was going through it in Olympiacos. He was with somebody I spoke to. I was kind of going through my ups and downs over there, but great dude. Me and him, you know, show a lot of love to each other for sure.
Talk to me about that. That's my next step to Olympiacos. It's crazy to see kind of what you've done and what you've done since then and before then and everything else between Champions League. And everybody will say EuroLeague's a step, like three steps up from the Champions League. Euro Cups is a couple steps up from Champions League, so on and so on. But in Olympiacos, it just didn't go right for you, man. I'll throw your numbers as your 6.8 points, whatever. And I like to put the positive with the negative because in the same season, you went to Savannah Vesda, which we'll talk about in a minute, and you more than doubled your output of what you did at Olympiacos. What was the difference between playing at Olympiacos and then moving to another team halfway through the season after they released you?
My coach wasn't there. Simple as that. David Blatt had left. Everyone in Europe knows he had his issues going on with his health. I started the first game of the year against Asvel. We lost it. Then after that, he ended up leaving. And then from there, I was taken out the starting lineup for whatever reason. And then slowly the minutes dropped. And that was it. They signed two more players. And you know how that goes. You know, coaches have their different vision of things. And it's just the business of basketball took over. That's all I can really say. You know, it happens. We all know what happens. And that was that. So I was kind of lost myself in that, trying to just figure out, how could I play more? Just figure out who I was. Once again, you start thinking about, you know, the rumors, he's Champions League player and, you know, he's not a EuroLeague player because now this happened. You know what I'm saying? Just all of those, the outside noise and, you know, so that was a tough couple months, to be honest with you, in my career, to be honest. That was extremely tough for me.
It's crazy, man, because like I always talk about the dreams that we have when we're young and everything else. And you know, your dream never ends up coming up. You never think about moments like that. You never think about like, damn, I might sign with the team and spend 6 months on the bench and not play. And because mentally, with the numbers that you've already put up and what you've already done, it's hard for you to lose your self-confidence because you feel confident. But in Europe, with so little positions out there to get a job, you're like, damn, all of a sudden I step into EuroLeague and I'm not getting no time and I'm not, what's going to happen to me?
Exactly. And now you start thinking about every little thing you're doing, trying to be perfect. And we all know playing basketball isn't a perfect game. So it kind of just, that year those several months kind of psyched. I was all, my mentally, I was just all over. I was psyched out. I remember playing against Cheska. We won, had 16, and then the next game didn't start. Like, just little things like that. It was just like, I was just like, when given the minutes and the opportunity, I'm doing something with it. So, just, you know, that was kind of like real tough for me, just dealing with all of that.
That's a hard part for me. When I research you guys before games and I see, like, you know, a player that averaged like 16, 17 minutes a game, but all of a sudden one game he played 27, and instead of dropping 12, he dropped 22 and pulled down 11 boards. Like, damn, man, why didn't he play 27 minutes every night if he's getting those kind of numbers, you know?
Yeah.
It's so hard. But when you go to Olympiacos, and of course you're there with Billy, right?
I was able to be up.
That's something to deal with too, because he's still the man over there.
Exactly. You know, and it's my first year at EuroLeague, so, you know, I don't have much say anyway.
When you went to Serbia, now, did you have your passport? Did you have the Serbian passport?
No, I didn't. I did not have a passport.
How'd you end up with Šamana Vezda, Red Star?
Obviously, Sokratov, my coach at Ike, he had took the job at Red Star, and he made the call. Obviously, he's like, you're not playing, so, you know, we can use somebody off the bench. The same thing how it was at Ike. The same exact way. So, to be honest with you, I almost didn't want to go because I was so comfortable with not playing. Like, I was just like, you know, whatever, season's over in April, because we was playing once a week anyway. We was just playing EuroLeague that year. So, I'm like, man, I'm about to go home soon, season's over, whatever. Like, I was comfortable, which was, that's not a good way to be.
Wait, hold on a second. I got to call a timeout real quick. How many times a day were you practicing when you were only playing once a week in Olympiacos?
Sometimes twice. But I will work out. So what I would do is I will only find peace when I worked out in the morning. So, like, it was one of them years where when I went to practice, I wasn't even happy. So I would work out early in the morning with a coach named Mike. Yup, get it in. Felt real good. They come to practice. Kind of like, all right, we already know what's going on. So I got into a routine of that. And then I just got too comfortable. I just got way too comfortable. And then Coach Sokratov called me and told me to come over, and then made the decision to go. And I kind of like everything just changed.
In all my life, man, that's the first time I've ever heard a player tell me that I just got comfortable with not playing.
Yeah, I really did. Like, I was getting paid on time, and for the most part, and it was just like, man, like, that's how messed up I was mentally. Like, and I was just so, like, ready to go home. I was just mentally just messed up. Like, and then I went to Red Star, and it kind of, like, just it brought me back to life, to be honest with you.
I remember in Sacramento, man, when I was so – I mean, I knew I wasn't there to play yet, you know what I mean? But I was just so mad. And we were in practice one day, and one of the players used to play for Villanova back in the day. I won't mention his name. He was sitting there. We were the starting five was going through the other team's players. I think we were playing Portland. And the starting five was just walking through Portland's plays. And I'm like, man, this sucks, man. I'm like, this is not what I expected. And he started doing this, like this, with his fingers. Like this. He says, you know what I'm doing right now? And I said, what? He said, getting paid. And then he went backwards. So I go backwards. And he said, you know what I'm doing now? I'm getting paid in reverse. And I'm like, damn, that's what the NBA is all about, isn't it? I said, if you get your time, you get your time. If you're not, you just worry about getting paid. It becomes a business, you know?
Yeah, I learned that real quick, to be honest with you. You got to learn that. If you don't understand that, then, you know, you could really get played out here. But you just got to understand, like, it's a business, man.
Yeah, it's just the way it is. You got me. Yeah. It's a short group. And whenever I think about it, that I retired at 35, and that was 21 years ago, dude. I've been retired twice as many years as I've been that I played. Damn, that time goes by fast, man.
Yeah, it be moving, man. I'm already 6 years in.
What about Milan? Now, after Šamana Vezda, you went off there and you go, and you walked into a project. Walked into Coach Messina coming back from the States, and they went and signed Kyle Hines. They went and signed Gigi Datome. They went and signed all these guys with a project in mind. They knew what they had in mind. They knew what they wanted to do. And you became a big part of that for them. What was your experience in Milan like?
Man, dope. Just playing with all those vets like that and guys that has been so successful on the EuroLeague level, NBA level, and in life. It was amazing. I learned a lot from those guys. It was dope, man. Like, it was really, really, it was really dope, man. Because I watched some of these guys play, you know. So to come into that was, you know, it was humbling for me. And the biggest thing for me that year was I don't want to say keep up, but apply pressure just like how those guys apply pressure. They've been doing it for years. You know what I'm saying? I'm young coming up. No one really, you know, I haven't done anything, you know, up until this point. This is how I'm thinking. So for me, I'm like, I'm at people every day. I'm working hard every day. And I'm just going to bring it every day. So that was kind of like my mentality all 11 months.
It's hard not to bring it with some of those guys that are on that team. They come out and work every day.
100%. And they've been doing it longer than me. So for me, it's like, I'm one of the younger guys. I'm about to get busy with y'all. You know what I'm saying? So I had the mentality of just trying to get better every day, pushing those guys. They push me. You know what I'm saying? Just things like that. So it was a good atmosphere for sure, 100%.
So many players have told me how much they just kind of like learned to be a professional around Kyle Hines, about being around Kyle. Yeah. and just like knowing, not only, I mean, we all know he's a great guy and he's cool, but his work ethic and everything else. What was it like for you to play with him? I mean, he just seems like he takes all you guys under his wings and like takes care of you guys.
Yeah, 100, always. Kyle was one of them dudes. He gonna make sure everybody's straight. He gonna make sure you straight. He gonna keep everybody calm. You know, we all know Kyle. He don't yell. He don't scream. He don't get too crazy. But once the room is getting crazy, then he'll yell, calm. You know, calm everybody down. But he was that guy. Like, I had my days where I was frustrated or whatever. He'll put me to the side. Talk to me, holler at me, you know, things like that. And these days when he had, you know, he was a little off and I'll try to pick him up or other guys try to pick him up. So that's kind of what Kyle brought to the team, kind of kept everybody together, whether we was up or we was down. You know what I'm saying? It was kind of like the voice of, you know, kind of like the voice for us that year. So it was dope playing. And, you know, playing against him, you know, for 2 years in EuroLeague. So it was dope just being with a player like that, you know. And he's from Jersey. So he's from my side, you know. I'm from New York, from Jersey. So we had a mutual understanding. And I played with his brother when I was in Lavery. I played with Tyler. So I already knew Tyler personally before I knew Kyle. So that was pretty dope.
Well, if you talk to Kyle again, you tell him to stop trying to take my damn job. Every time I turn around, I need to cuss him out. Be like, Kyle, man, I know I'm getting older, and you're getting older too. This is gonna be stopped pretty soon, but you ain't taking my job, man. I don't care how many interviews you do. But with all those veterans around you and all those good players around you, man, you had a season, 14.3 points a game, 1.4 assists. You became the offensive leader of that team. And I remember the Final Four, man. You went crazy. You went crazy at one point. I was just like, man, I was off, jumping off my seat, commentating the game. Going, man, look at this.
Yeah. Now, I really credit those guys to, you know, playing with Chacho and Malcolm Delaney, to be honest with you. They gave me a lot of freedom to be me. They gave me a lot of freedom to just play my game and kind of just my style within the offense. It just, everyone, you know what I'm saying? They gave me the freedom just to be me. And I always, before I signed with Milan, I told Coach, I said, as long as you allow me to be me, and, you know, I'm not going to obviously take stupid shots and go, you know, all that craziness, but just if you allow me to be in attack mode, whether it's scoring, passing, but just allow me to attack and make decisions, then I'll be perfectly fine. And that's what he allowed me to do. I had his trust, and, you know, the rest is, you know, we all see what happened.
It's funny because I mentioned Kyle, I mentioned DJ, I mentioned everybody else, and you just brought up Malcolm and Chacho. And I look, I'm like, damn, that's really hard to get 14 points a game with those two guys on the floor. They right. Like to have the ball in their hands.
Exactly. But for me, like anybody knows, like, I can play multiple different ways. And I've done it up until this point in my career. I can play off the ball and do a lot of catch shooting. I can run off screens. When I was in Milan, I ran off a lot of screens, a lot of catch and shooting, because I had Chacho MD kind of running the show. And then I'll get my ISO, you know, within the flow of the game, depending on what's going on. Certain clubs I've been with, I've played a lot more ISO ball just because of the circumstance. So, and I told Coach, I said, look, whatever you need for me to do, I can do. I can really do anything, to be honest with you. You know, it just depends on, you know, the situation of the team. So that year I came off a lot of screens, a lot more catch and shoot, because those guys was being great just with facilitating and attacking and drawing defenders, blah, 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 things like that. So it made my life easy to score. I just had to really just knock down shots.
Your Final Four game was crazy, dude. I was just sitting there going, where the hell are these shots coming from? And it was
Yeah.
But that had to be a tough one for you guys, man, because I know how much Coach Messina and the rest of you guys had this whole, I mean, of course, you accomplished a goal by getting to the Final Four, because I think he set like baby steps. It was like, all right, let's get to the playoffs first. If we do that, then let's try to get the Final Four. And I don't care how many baby steps you think about taking, when you get to the Final Four and don't do it.
Yeah, that hurts. That
it's
hurts.
So hard, man, isn't it?
Yeah, that hurts. That hurts because we was right. We all know we was right there. You know, like we was right there. Like we was seconds away from playing in the EuroLeague championship. First year we put the project together. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of like, and we have spoken about this all season long.
That's what I mean, man. It was like everybody knew that it was going to happen, and then it happened.
Exactly.
And when you guys got to the Final Four, I was like, damn, man, is this just like destiny? You know, I mean, you guys obviously weren't the favorite team in the Final Four, but the favorite team usually never wins the Final Four either.
We all know how that goes, you know? So it was, for us, we was just living in the moment. We wasn't trying to get too high, because we know what's going on, but we just trying to stay right here and just keep working, keep chipping away every day. So that was our main focus that year.
That's the nice thing about having the veterans around. It's kind of like everybody knows exactly what's going on.
Exactly. They've been there before. And for me, I'm a follow your lead. Y'all been here before. I'm just going to make sure I'm ready to go. I'm ready to work. Y'all been here before. I'm going to follow y'all lead. And for me, how I'm feeling is I've been under these lights before. Okay, it's Champions League, but it's the same lights. It's the same. Everyone's watching. It's the same thing. That's how I looked at it. So it's like, yeah, y'all won EuroLeague, but I got two back-to-back Champions League that everyone just doesn't do that. So that's kind of like my mentality going into it also, just keeping that confidence.
That's what I mean. Even in like bad, good moments or bad moments, guys, that once you get to a certain point, it's hard for you to lose that confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You doubt yourself every now and then because of a bad game, but all it takes a little bit of hard work and get back. But here's my big one. We're going to finish up with this one, but here's my big one. Now, you become part of this project. Y'all get to the Final Four. You know where I'm going with it. Don't say nothing. Let me finish. Let me do my job. You get to the Final Four. Y'all lose. And when I read the articles and I was doing the research, it really seemed like Coach Messina was really, he couldn't believe that you left. He couldn't believe that you weren't there to continue with the project. And with all those veterans and all the people we're talking about, with the Tomies, with the Chachas, everything else, what makes you get up and go back to the Euro Cup to part design? And on top of it, this is the last thing we got in common with my boy Selko. Look, it's my boy. He's one of my favorite people in the world. I owe so much of me personally and what I was able to achieve and succeed to him for the years that I spent with him, because he showed me how to be a better person, a better player. He asked more out of me than anybody's ever asked from me. And he made me realize that I was able to give more than I ever thought I could give. But there's a cost to that also. And we're going to get to that in a minute. But now I want to talk about how you decided to leave this project that was working.
Yeah. Definitely. It was working. I'll say this.
First thing everybody talks about is money. I know that. I hear that.
100%. I get that too. But one thing that I've learned since I've been in Europe, I've learned a lot. But I'm trying to figure out how can I say this. Because the media likes to paint a certain picture. And all I'm going to say is they know why I left. They know exactly why I left, because XYZ wasn't correct. They know deep down inside why I left.
They're the club. Milano.
They know, you know, and I'm just going to keep it at that, because they know deep. That's why they didn't. Yeah, we want them bad. We want them. They know exactly why. And they know where I stood with that situation. So that's why nothing ever came out saying I didn't want to be there or things like that. They know exactly where I stood with that situation, and they know why it didn't happen the way it was supposed to happen. So, you know, and they'll tell you that. So that's all I can really say about that situation.
So deep down, you kind of wanted to be there, but it just wasn't able to work out.
Yeah, it didn't work out. And I'm no dummy neither. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm no idiot. One thing in this business, you have to know your worth. Simple as that. That's all I can say.
And the reason why you have to know your worth is because this ain't a forever career, you know?
Exactly. We all know that.
If I could be a rock and roll singer and do concerts till I'm 80, that's a whole different, you know?
Yeah.
It's a whole different life, man. But after 36, 37, the body don't work anymore, man.
Yeah, exactly.
So you join one of the most historic clubs in the world. Plus, you have a Serbian passport to go with it, which kind of helps along the way. And you join what I'm assuming, because I know my boy Selko well enough, he's not going somewhere that doesn't have an idea and a direction.
Exactly.
So what is it that gets you to Partizan?
You said it already, an idea and a direction. That was one thing I asked him about, kind of just like, what's your vision, what's your plan? Because I don't like going places. And for me, I always need something to motivate me, as I've been motivated for the last 6 years now. So that's kind of like how I like to build each season off of just some kind of motivation. So one thing I asked was, you know, what was your plan? Where did you see this team? And obviously he's getting back to EuroLeague. So once he said, get back to EuroLeague and we trying to do it now, like right now, that was all I needed to hear. You know, obviously with him being the coach who he was, I didn't need to know no more. I played against him. I did my research.
Did he approach you first?
Well, agent and, you know, kind of around the same time, you know, when negotiations in summertime, you know how that goes. So that kind of like how that played out. And once he told me the vision, it aligned with mine and my work ethic. And for me, it was just, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't easy at first. It was not easy. Like, it was not easy at all. Like,
you ain't got to tell me.
It was probably one of the hardest decisions ever, like, you know, because you hear like, yeah, he's a yearly player, and then he's like, why do you do that? It wasn't just for this. And so it was a lot. It was really, really a lot. So I kind of had to really think on that for probably about 24 hours, because it happened so quick. So, and I kind of just came to grips, like, you know what, like, I'm in control of what I'm in control of. This is what I want to do. I want to do this, you know. So, and I was, once I did, I was happy, man. I was happy. Well, honest and be honest with you, what really made me happy was just getting the feedback from other players, just kind of saying like they respected what I did, kind of just controlling my own destiny, controlling my own path. So that's how I knew right then and there I didn't make the wrong decision. You know what I'm saying? So just kind of having that other players' support with that kind of, I already was confident in my decision, but just hearing that from other players, like they respected what I did, it's kind of like, you know.
It just kind of reinforces what you've already
felt. Yeah, what I already felt, exactly.
Anytime anybody makes a move, you always have a doubt. You're hardly ever 100% sure that's the perfect move. Just like I tell everybody else, I mean, look, if you decide to do something and you move somewhere else, the only reason why it's not going to work is because of you. If you don't want it to work and if you're not happy, then it's not going to work. And that's the bottom line. So you gotta work as hard as you can to make it work. Just making a move isn't going to make it easy, you know?
Exactly.
Tell me about my boy now. Tell me about my boy Coach. Come on.
Nah, to be honest with you, you know, I asked Gigi to tell me. So once I signed with Coach, I text Gigi ASAP. Gigi, tell me everything. Tell me everything you know, Gigi. But Gigi, honestly, Gigi kept it real with me. Like, he told me, he was like, look, like, Coach, he demands a lot, X, Y, Z, this and that. Nothing I've never heard of. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, you know, so I come to practice and honestly, it's not nothing I've never seen before. He yells and screams, yes. Like, he's extremely demanding, yes. But I'm used to that. Like, I didn't play for crazy coaches growing up. Like, I didn't play for coaches that yell, curse, call you this. Like, I didn't been around. I've played, like, and like I say all the time, it's like, if you hear what he's saying, then you'd be like, oh, he's not even crazy or he's not even what you think he is. He just said, shoot the effing ball. But he just said a bunch of curse words, and he said, shoot the ball, or be aggressive, like, or stop doing something stupid, or focus, or concentrate. So, like, that's really, like, you know, so when he's yelling and screaming, it's not really, like, he yelled at me. We played yesterday. He yelled at me. They had a hard hedge. Throw the ball ahead. Now it's plus one, whatever. I held it like an idiot. Held it, tried to rescreen again and attack, and he yelled at me for that. But it's like, he yelled at me to say, kick the ball ahead and do what we've been doing. So, like, if you really listen to what he's saying, it's like, bro, it's really not that bad. It's just do what we've been doing. So, I like playing for Coach, man.
Y'all got Zelko light.
I think we did, too.
Yeah, I had back 20 years ago, man. I get so mad when I hear y'all like, yeah, he yells, but he's okay. I mean, I'm like, really? The first 2 months, I hated that man. This guy's going to kill me. But I'll tell you what he did, man. We had a meeting with the president of the team because we weren't playing that well. And the president showed up a little bit late to the meeting. They canceled our practice so that we all go to the meeting. It was 11 in the morning. And the president showed up at like 11:20. And he came in with his, like, you know, his peeps, you know what I mean? With his bodyguards, you know? And this is the president of Real Madrid. And as soon as he starts to talk, Zelko gets up and says, "Oh, one second, Mr. President." He's like, "Before you say anything, I need to speak." And we all just kind of like looked up at him. He's like, "This is the way. I mean, we're 2 months into the season." He said, "Rule number one is going to be you never, ever cancel one of my practices again, ever. This will be the last time you cancel one of my practices." And he said, "Rule number two is, if you want my team to be here at 11 o'clock, he's like, your ass needs to be here 5 minutes beforehand. He's like, don't show up late and disrespect my team." And man, I was sitting, I looked at him, I'm like, that's the kind of dude I give everything for.
100%. I agree with you.
He came to us and he had already won 2 European titles in a row. So he could do that.
Yeah.
Anybody else does that, they probably get kicked out in a second. But the fact that you look up as a player and you're like, man, you know, when things go bad, you know, he's always going to have your back. Because the one thing I always say about Zelko is he's so hard to play for sometimes, but it's all justified. It's all, like you said, it all makes sense. His delivery is a little bit different.
It's different, yeah.
But the guy knows more about basketball, man, than I know about, I mean, anything.
The delivery is off. But if you listen to the delivery, you're done. You got to just focus and listen to what he's saying. Because he's really telling you to be, at least this is what I experienced. I can't speak for other players I played from years ago. So, but the delivery, yes, he yells and screams for sure. But what he's saying is, like, he's really telling you to be you. Or, you know, if you're a rebounder, rebound effing ball. Or come on, play hard. Like, even like he likes dogs. You know, if you play hard, run through a wall, I'm telling you, he'll go to bat for you every time.
Ask Zelko about me when you go to practice tomorrow. Tell him you did the crossover with me.
Okay.
And talk to him a little bit and see if you could have some love like I used to have, because he used to let me shoot whenever I wanted to.
I get that. This year I found myself being more of a leader because we're young. So this year I'm more of a leadership role and kind of just being another voice. So when coach is yelling, I'm kind of that extra voice to, okay, this is what he's saying. Like, kind of more in a calm tone. So it's been a dope role for me.
I think I might be the only player that Zelko never told me to play defense. He just asked me. He's like, "Hey, man, can you just play a little bit of defense for me, please?" That's all. He's like, score your 35 a game. Just give me a little defense. That's all. I said, "Zelko," I said, "come on, man. If I score 35, my guy scores 15, what? Who wins?" We're about to finish this right now, but I got to do this test. They warned you about the test, right?
They did. But hit me with it. Come on, man. Let's go.
The crossover test.
They didn't send you the questions, so you got some easy ones, I think, if you know what's going on. But you got to get 100 points. You got 5 questions, all right? Each one of them is worth 10 points, and it goes up. So it's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. All right, so we all add them up. Right now, I think we got a tie at the top. All right, first question, here we go. How many teams per group does the actual 7 days Euro Cup have per group?
Per group? Oh, that's a great question.
If you don't get the 10-pointer, we're in trouble, bro.
10. 10 teams per group.
Euro Cup. Now, it's 7 days Euro Cup, not Euro League.
Yeah, each group. So group A, group B. Yeah, group A has, see, now you got me hesitating. Group A has 10 teams, group B has 10 teams.
There you go, that's 10 points. Question number 2, okay. Worth 20. You're doing good right now, you got your 10. Who was last year's EuroLeague assist leader at AX Armani Exchange Milan?
Assist leader?
Assist leader of the team.
Chacho.
Man. 2 for 2. 30 points. I got 165 assists, but I don't think they want it. I don't think they'd be asking for that. Question number 3, worth 30 points. You're sitting at 30 right now. This would be worth 60 if you get it. With which team did Zelko Obradovic win his first European club title?
Partisan.
There you go, baby. Really get you. You're rolling back at 94. 60 points. Let's see, this one's worth 40. You get tied up right here. Number four, which is the team that has won the most Euro Cup titles since 2003?
Since 2003, the most Euro Cup titles?
The most Euro Cup titles since 2003.
I got two teams in mind. I don't know which one I'm going to go with since 2003. That's a tough one. That is a tough one. Euro Cup titles since 2003. I didn't know nothing about Europe in 2003. Valencia.
Bam, you got it.
Boom.
Boom, that's 100 points. You're going to be the first one to get 150 of it. You ready? Now, I came back on a three-way tie. The highest I got last year was 74. I got to talk to my boy to make these questions a little bit tougher. Last one, number five, worth 50. How many EuroLeague seasons has Partizan NIS Belgrade participated in?
How many seasons? Oh, man.
Since EuroLeague started, 2001.
Hold on, so EuroLeague started in 2001?
The EuroLeague, yeah.
Okay, so since 2001, how many did they participate?
Since really year 2000, I guess, but how many EuroLeague seasons Partizan participated in the EuroLeague since 2000?
God, I'm gonna go with, I know a couple players that played for them. I'm gonna go with five.
Ah, damn. 13. If you had 13, I'm about to jump off my seat like we were back, like we were back in the Final Four, yo.
That was a good one though, because I did not know that one at all.
They participated in every EuroLeague season from 2001 to 2013.
Okay, damn.
They started 2001, 2002, and ended 2013-14.
Got you,
Kevin, my man. What I said in the beginning was true, man. You just look like one of these players that like fought and clawed to find your way, man. You found it, and it's been a pleasure talking to you. And this project you got going on with Zelko and with Partizan, man, I wish you the best of luck. Because,
man, appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
I want to see my boys back in Europe again.
Man, that's the main goal. That would mean a lot to me if we're able to get back, So just working every day, man.
Yeah, my man, I appreciate all the time and your generosity and your honesty, man. Appreciate it a lot.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.